Noon to everyone. Happy September 5th, 2023. Welcome into today's Portland Housing Advisor Council meeting, Commission meeting. I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I am facilitating today's gathering. I'm glad that you are here. Hopefully you have the agenda for today. We're going to do our best to stay true to that agenda. It is a full one and much to discuss, to be aware of, to dialogue regarding. Welcome into today's time. We're going to follow the agenda. As I mentioned, there will be a moment for public testimony. And then after public testimony, we will hear from the interim director and the update. We'll talk about inclusionary housing. And then the remaining 2023 work plan, which will include a bureau cluster alignment and fall retreat discussion. And then a few items as we wrap up. So I trust we are ready to go. For those who are the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, I would ask you to turn on your cameras if you can and identify yourself as being present. Thank you very much. See names.
Hi, all. This is Sarah Stevenson. I'm a co-chair of the Housing Advisory Commission, and I'm here.
Good to see you.
Kimberly Horner.
Good to see you.
Oh, this is Steph Condor. I think that's what we're doing. Sorry, I joined a couple minutes late.
Yes, having all of the Portland Housing Advisory Commission identify themselves.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
I'm Julia Delgado.
Good to see you. Right. We will continue. As the meeting is going, provided there are questions and or concerns or feedback related to the agenda today, I would ask that you engage with the Portland Housing Bureau and the Portland Housing Bureau staff. So Portland Housing Bureau staff, I'm going to ask you to do something very similar. For those of you who can, turn on your camera. And I won't have you call your name, but just turn on your camera and wave so that people can identify who it is that they can reach out to if there are any questions. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Excellent. I am good to see you. Interesting to see your face over your face. What's that? All right. Do we have anybody signed up for public testimony?
We do have two maybes. And they are Jason and Hayden. I do not see them on Zoom.
We do see a phone number ending in 7624. I don't know if that is one of the individuals calling in for public testimony. And to unmute, they would do *6. Is that correct?
Right?
Well, the number is gone. All right, not seeing anyone who signed up as possible, we will continue in our agenda. And if time presents, we can always come back to it at the end. Very good. Our interim director's update.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Molly Rogers, interim director of the Housing Bureau, and I go by she, her pronouns. I have a number of announcements and updates for you all, some very bittersweet. So just sharing my news, which is Friday is my last day at the Portland Housing Bureau. I've accepted a new position to be the housing director for Washington County, starting in mid-October or October 9th. And it is, very, very bittersweet for me to leave all my fabulous colleagues over almost 5 years here. When I served as deputy director, Portland Housing Bureau to be able to serve all of you in your capacity as PAC members, and just an incredible amount of energy and capacity and thoughts and new concepts and ideas and innovations that have come out of this commission. And so I'm very humbled to be able to figure out how we were able to move on some of many of these concepts, but also recognize that we will make sure that Portland Housing Bureau is in very good hands going forward. So a few things, an update on that front. The commissioner's office is working on securing a new interim director that will hopefully start on September 18th. At the same time, as you may all know, there is a permanent director recruitment happening at the same time. It's a national search, and the commissioner's office is hoping to be conducting the next round of interviews in the next couple weeks. So it's hard to say exactly how long we will have an interim director at that time, but this interim director is not applying to be the permanent director, so truly will be interim, and that person will be announced tomorrow from an email from the commissioner's office. But from what I can tell, everyone will be in very good hands, incredible amount of capacity coming, and the timing just didn't quite completely work out with this new job opportunity with when a new director was chosen by the commissioner's office. So that's the piece that is a little bit bittersweet, but I'm thrilled that we'll have an interim director to continue the core operations and the mission and the values of this fabulous bureau. So I want to first just express my gratitude and thanks to each of you who showed us support, who showed me support, and also being able to really lead and be champions of more resources for affordable housing and craft ambitious policy that we have done. So with that, I'll take a pause with that and see if any of the commissioners have any thoughts or questions on all of those transitions.
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to unmute. I was typing.
Me too.
Quick comment. I was typing it, but I'm just going to say it out loud. Molly, thank you so much for everything you have done for PHB and for the city of Portland and our housing industry. Just wanted to share my gratitude and say congratulations on your new position.
Same. I just thank you for everything you've done. It's been a pleasure working with you. Hope to work with you in the future. And just good luck, and really appreciate the collaboration. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I also echo the sentiments of the other people on a committee. I think you've done a fabulous job, and we really appreciate you stepping in and being the acting. We are certainly going to miss you. You even put a lot of motion in place in your role as the interim, and hopefully we'll be able to still carry out some of the instruments that you put in place and that you've been working on. And so congratulations. So it's Washington's gain, our loss, but we will continue to reach out to you as my organization, but even as PAC committee members. So thank you, Molly.
Thank you. I'm not going far. It's true. And the managers all have my phone number. People keep answering questions for us as soon in any way I can. And obviously, it's an opportunity for someone to come in with a new vision and more energy. And also, just wanted to just share a few words. PHB, at least certainly my almost 5 years, is, I believe, has the strongest management team we've ever seen. We're obviously still growing tremendously in terms of how we're responding to different strategies, interventions, but I cannot feel more proud of the fabulous leadership team that is in place. Everyone has stepped up. Everyone has done more than two jobs since last year. Everyone is still a little bit feeling the fatigue of COVID when we had to stand up, you know, almost, I don't even know how many tens of millions of dollars to get out into the community. At the same time of having the most robust, highest producing pipeline we've ever had, at the same time as recalibrating quaternary housing and advancing the North and Northeast housing strategy with maximum indebtedness and meeting all those various goals, always putting motions, everything in place to do all that work. I think everyone's a little bit fatigued, but recognize there is obviously a lot more work to be done, but everyone has just been so incredible. I've been so humbled and in awe of all the work. So, just want to take that moment. A few other sort of updates for you all. At the same time as KHP has gone through its own transitions, the whole city at writ large is undertaking charter reform transformation, which is leading to a first cut of an organizational chart that is supposed to be released sometime next week. Right now, as you all recall, Portland Housing Bureau is part of the Community and Economic Development Cluster, or service area, which involves Prosper Portland, the Bureau of Development Services, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. From what I can glean and gather is that will all stay in place. We will continue to be as part of that same service area and reporting to a deputy city administrator. So that's what's going to be, the city has been working over the last several months, is really understanding the role of the deputy city administrator. Various what we call DCAs will report to the city administrator. So teasing out the role of the mayor with the new council of 12 members, in addition to how those initial branches will play out. From what I can tell, you know, housing will be still Housing Bureau and will be part of that service area. And we've seen in the last 8-9 months an incredible amount of synergies and coordination that we've never really achieved before until we were able to really be under the simple one Commissioner Rubio. And so it's just that there's been an incredible slate of housing production work, looking at code, looking at where permitting, how to increase permitting speeds, how to really look at potentially new resources and catalyze additional housing production and economic development in ways that we've never seen this kind of coordination before. So I just wanted to recognize the commissioner's office with that leadership and say that that's the kind of momentum that we need to keep building through charter reform. Within that, I just wanted to also share with you all, there's been a few things that have happened since you all met. I think we had a little bit of a break over the summer. We're gonna get a little bit of time this afternoon talking about some of the recommendations from our inclusionary housing panel and work group that is looking to make the program even more effective. And we'll start rolling out a series of approvals and recommendations to City Council. We wanted to pass those past you first. Also wanted to recognize we have gotten the county to support an increase in our home buyer opportunity limited tax exemption program, otherwise known as Pulte. Pulte was capped at 100 homes that were developed by for-profit developers. And that cap has been increased to 500 as a way to help either spur more housing production and more homeownership opportunities, and also recognize that there is a lot of, they're generally, we're tapped out in the first quarter when they come in for that tax abatement program, and we see the need to do even more on that front. The other major work we've done in the last few months is PHP and Prosper Portland has codified an agreement, a formal agreement for the Broadway corridor redevelopment and setting the stage of establishing a goal of 720 affordable housing units in that newly established community over the course of the next 20 years. That That work, as you all know, started, I believe, we got Kurt Krieger on the call here. We started under Kurt's leadership and has finally concluded in how we're going to lay out that parcel and go vertical with the potential for an RFP this winter for that first phase for Broadway Corridor. And we've worked really closely with Prosper these last few months to explore the idea of new tax increment financing districts. So there is the idea that we could be looking at three new tax increment financing districts in East Portland and a potential new one in Central City. So the idea being we're rapidly changing communities and environment. We've learned from the colleague HIF work that we need to co-lead with community, and we need to make sure the needs of that particular neighborhood and community is being centered in terms of the strategies being developed. So East Portland strategies are going to look different than the Central City strategies, different constituents and different stakeholders, but we're working with Prosper on that exploration work, so more to come on those fronts. Meanwhile, the Portland Housing Bond, we only have one project left to be to reach financial close. Otherwise, everything else has been financially closed and under construction. And we have a number of projects up close in the Metro Bond. And we have right now on the street is a solicitation of about $29 million that combines Metro Bond Fund. It combines county general funds. It combines services dollars from the joint office. It combines vouchers from Home Forward, and it combines the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's Clean Energy Fund resources. So a lot of collaboration, a lot of coordinating. We've been to that level of systems alignment has been in the works for about a year. A huge shout out to Jill Chen and her team. Huge shout out to line all this up and all those negotiations, understanding everyone's respective goals and outcomes for the solicitation. We're hoping to be able to build and create another 400 units of affordable housing that are permit ready. And that closes on September 25th. With that, I hope we'll be happy to take any questions.
Comments and or questions from the commission. Seeing and hearing none. Any additional information?
The few things that just maybe else to mention around charter reform, the next step is actually to be working on a combined budget with our service area. So that will affect the work of PHAC. We want to explore some of that, the idea of a retreat in November. I'm going to talk about that towards the end of this agenda. There's things that we need to do to get ready as a bureau for that kind of consolidated budget. And then there's, of course, all the work we need to do across our whole service area. Yeah. So there's many sort of pieces right now that we're trying to better understand, other than just this is a heads up that it will be a different process this year. And we're not entirely sure exactly how it's going to play out. We're also learning as we go. But it will we'll bring you along and hopefully dive deeper in terms of what that could be. Kimberly?
Yes, this is in response to one of the updates that you're giving on the TIF districts. I think that many times people think that those are largely, they largely cash flow in the first year or so. And can you give us an indication, maybe even using the Coley district as an example, like how much would be coming in on an annual basis within the first 5 years or so, if you have that information?
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of the exploration work is really understanding the financial modeling and the financial impact. A lot of that is going to need to be approved and negotiated with the county and the other taxing jurisdictions. But to your point, Commissioner Horner, yes, there's these things have a increment, if you will. There's a buildup. Generally, the first couple of years are spent on more planning efforts and working with the community, and we're trying to figure out ways, more ways to get resources into the community to help with that planning work more than ever before. Angel, I'm going to defer to you. There's your experience with the Cully TIF and in terms of our forecast, you know, how many years it generally takes to be able to start moving the needle, if you will, in our housing strategies.
Yes, I'm just checking the numbers here based on the latest forecast from Prosper Portland. So for Cully TIF district, the estimate amount during the period of 5 years will be around 11 million. For fiscal year 20, the fiscal year 2024 is the current budget. Is just 114,827 dollars, so it's increasing every year.
And then generally, the Prosper Portland the idea being that we have the current set aside policy in place. So there is a question out there with, you know, us being a part of the service area as well as PIAC. When the periodic review of that set-aside policy, I think, is something you should all talk about at the retreat in November, because it does, that does affect how much comes to PHP and goes out into housing production or housing preservation or home retention or home repair, whatever our programs are that the community helps lay out. And right now, the set-aside policy is at 45%. With Cully, what they did was 45% PHP, 45% Prosper, and then there's a 10% floating, depending on how the community is identifying needs at that particular moment in terms of how they're working on the action plan, the five-year action plans, and how that gets updated all the time. So that would be a piece of the policy puzzle we still need to figure out in the future TIFs. That's the working assumption. It's the 45 for PHP. Angel mentioned some numbers, but what we need to clarify too is, you know, that doesn't include PHP staffing in those numbers. So what we have to do is also build in what portion of staff are working on those TIF projects too. So we just want to be clear of how much money would actually go out to like a solicitation. So a couple years of planning work. It will take a few years for the 11 million to build up.
Thank you.
Any further questions from commissioners?
Well, Co-Chair Folsom, you missed a few updates, a few announcements. I don't know how much, anyway, but let us know if there are some updates you want me to share. As you may or may not have heard, I'm leaving the Bureau. There's going to be a new interim director, I believe, September 18th, and the permanent director recruitment is ongoing, and they're hoping for another round of interviews in the next couple of weeks.
Yep, we will miss you, but I'll see you in Washington County. And I do apologize for being late, everybody. My prior meeting went over.
It is great to see you. Glad you made it.
Good to see you as well. And thank you for facilitating the meeting.
My delight, my delight. It seems like you and I haven't seen each other in person in a long time.
I know, but we will one of these days soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll continue on in our agenda. Was there any specific information around the budget that needed to be cleared up or communicated that we haven't? No. Okay. Inclusionary housing calibration study. The update and the discussion is is Molly and Dorian.
Good afternoon. I'm Dori Hillier, the manager of our development incentives team. And a lot of people across the Bureau and the city have worked really hard on this process over the last really year, pretty much, that we started kicking off the work group and hiring a consultant to help in this process. And inclusionary housing's just, we've surpassed our 6-year mark, which for me, having been involved that whole time, seems incredible. Still seems like we're just started. So we're gonna cover today a bit of a condensed version of what was presented at a recent city council work session, talking about sort of what went into this IH calibration study, some of the cost comparison study information, different analysis that contributed to what we all reviewed at the work group, and sort of that informed then the recommendations that came forward from the from that work group, kind of where we're headed from here. So I know we've talked about this. Next slide, please. As far as the purpose of the calibration study itself, well, there was a commitment, of course, up front that we would look back at the effectiveness of the program, how it was working. But before that, you know, we're looking at kind of the calibration itself. It's really just the technical aspects of the program. You know, are the incentives that are being offered adequate to offset the requirements of the policy? Are the objectives being met, primarily creating more 60% area median income units and family size units, whereas the, you know, the minimum standard that the state allowed under inclusionary housing was 80% AMI? And are we getting affordable housing built throughout the city, which is, you know, above and beyond what we're able to create through our general funding resources with the Bureau? And are we creating mixed income buildings? So the other part of the calibration study is looking at what areas could we simplify standards, add any flexibility, and create more clarity across the administrative rules, et cetera, to make the program work more smoothly, both for developers and for us administratively at the Bureau. And of course, it became more and more obvious that we needed to consider how inclusionary housing fits within the broader picture of development feasibility right now, particularly as the city goes through coming out of the effects of COVID and now inflation and other aspects. Next slide, please. So some of the early findings that were brought to us by the consultant, BAE, was sort of looking at just the what those obvious costs have been and kind of having some shared agreement of, you know, what the environment is. And so looking across all of the work that we kind of looked at three different types of construction, since they do vary so significantly across those types as to the cost. But no matter which, you know, wood frame type three, and concrete, the result was that construction costs have increased exponentially. So, you know, from 55 to 70% across the board, it's a 29% increase, you know, in our income. But, you know, we're not able to catch up, as we all know, I think, in this virtual room with those costs. Next slide. So as part of that analysis, BAE also looked at peer cities. So that was Seattle, Austin, Sacramento, and Denver, to get an idea too of what they are experiencing as well. And the end result is that we're all falling in line with one another as to the challenges that that the cities are seeing across the line. There are significant cost increases, and that the financial feasibility of multifamily development is frankly just challenging across the board. As far as looking at that sort of six-story apartment, 3 to 4 story apartment, surface parking, townhouse park apartments, you know, if the range is from $300,000 to $500,000 per unit that it's costing on average to build. The rents at the same time are not necessarily keeping up with the cost of construction, which makes it more challenging and makes investors be more conservative, as many of you know, as far as getting projects to pencil out. So the return on investment in peer cities has some balance, but where there might be a little bit more stable market, like Seattle, they get perhaps a little bit more less stringent standards on how much they need to get for their returns than maybe we're seeing here in Portland and some of the other cities. Whereas we are pretty comparable, there were some areas where we differ with other cities. Seattle has a little bit higher land and park costs. They don't charge SDCs directly, system development charges, but they do have other infrastructure charges that are charged instead. And they have a higher income pool of renters, just based on this, having Amazon within the central city, et cetera. So it does cost a little bit more to build a unit there. Sacramento was also a little bit more expensive, but had similar land costs. Denver had higher land costs, but no SDCs. It's about the same as it is to construct a unit in Portland. Next slide. Further on, as looking through that study, comparing again, in this case, 5 development prototypes across the board, through interviews with different developers and reviews of the local requirements and how they contribute to the cost of development. Within Portland, system development charges make up roughly 3 to 7% of project costs. Obviously, on a smaller sort of town home and smaller apartments, that is higher just based on scale. An estimate of 3 to 6% of project costs go towards bike parking, and the market demand for some would use space for additional units, of course. This doesn't really apply in a townhouse scenario. Ground floor active use, so 1 to 4% of project costs for market rate development, 11 to 12% for affordable housing development. Seen as definitely a big cost for that affordable housing in particular, as you're all aware. Design review is estimated to add about another 1% of the project cost total, and can add about 6 months the time is money. And another, all of these were also things that came out of the BDS survey as well that kind of helped direct what areas BAE would drill down to analyze further. So trees, as far as the process and uncertainty, as we know in any development, not knowing which tree was going to need to stay or what the cost was going to be to remediate the removal of trees. And public infrastructure came out as being highly variable, hard to quantify. It's hard to really put a number to what that impact would be on average to a project. So digging down, next slide again, into the assessment and findings. As far as where we started with inclusionary housing, the program itself, when it was approved by City Council in 2016, again, it started as of January of 2017. It is a mandatory program for buildings adding new units of 20 or more of them. And the base requirement is that 20% of those units be affordable at 80% of area median income. We added the option for buildings to be 10% at 60% of area median income, with additional incentives to make that more attractive. We also have options that primarily emphasize units on site based on the incentives that are available, but we do have a fee in lieu and off-site option as well. And units do need to be affordable under the IH program for 99 years. And there are requirements to ensure the units are comparable in quality, size, bedroom composition, and distribution throughout the building compared to market rate units. So, and we to date have, in these last 6 years, already been able to create over 1,000 units that are already active or in the permitting pipeline. And we've also generated about $4 million in funding through fee in lieu that we're able to use to support other PHP investments. Next slide. So some of the other things that were part of the IH calibration study, besides just the work with BAE and that analysis, was to drill down a little further in the offsite option, the home ownership part of the program, and exploring the possibility of extending the tax exemption outside of the central city. Also, we looked at the reconfiguration option, which is allowing fewer units in the building as long as they are two or more bedrooms, family-sized units, and then additional things that were requested at the work group as we went. So we worked with a contract with Portland State University to do a resident experience survey of residents in IH units to date. We also did a site utilization analysis, reviewing those 12 to 19 unit projects to see if there really was a big impact on, buildings trying to avoid being part of inclusionary housing. In short, the result was it didn't appear to be so. There were an increase in 12 to 19 unit projects, but there was but not proportionally any higher than the rest of the construction happening. So it didn't appear to be, we were able to bust that assumption that had floated around. We looked at pretty extensively at a number of other jurisdictions across the country to review the incentives and other parts of the program. The lowdown from that was that the city of Portland's actually providing a lot more incentives than any other program that we reviewed across the country as far as helping offset the impact of inclusionary housing to development projects. We did the prototype analysis. We also did a development cost study that was part of another contract with BAE through the commissioner's office to say, not just inclusionary housing, really what is happening in the market in Portland right now. And obviously we've talked about the stakeholder work group that was part of all of that. Next slide, please. Methodology that BAE used for their analysis, we talked about this a little bit already in the prior slides. They started with the original prototype analysis that we used for development of the program. They did 15 base prototypes reflecting a range of developments from small to large and across what they call high rent areas and low rent areas based on what market rents are across the city. And we're then able to develop a market analysis and then test that through interviews with developers and stakeholders across the city. And could then say, what would be feasible under the current market conditions with and without inclusionary housing? And then looking at the offset of the incentives and the impact that that has compared to the impact of reducing rents through inclusionary housing. Next slide. So across those different 15 scenarios, and including high, low rent, and different market types or the different types of buildings, it is an exponential number of spreadsheets potentially, right? So generalizing, what we were able to tell is that within the central city of planned district of Portland. So that covers your downtown part of the Central East Side, but does not cover, for instance, Slab Town and Goose Hollow. Within the Central City currently, the incentive offset for providing inclusionary housing includes a full tax exemption for the whole building, providing the affordable units through inclusionary housing. And that very much was a sufficient offset economically to the project, that inclusionary housing had at least a net effect or net zero effect on the performance of the buildings. Outside of the Central City in the higher cost markets, such as those Goose Hollow, Slab Town areas, by not receiving the full tax exemption, but having very similar costs and rents as to Central City projects, those did have a larger impact from inclusionary housing without as much of the incentives, since they don't get the full tax exemption. Outside of the Central City, in some of the lower cost markets, where rents are closer to market, the affordable rents are closer to the market rents, projects would have received greater incentives than the cost of IH potentially. However, that doesn't mean that they would necessarily be feasible for other reasons. Next slide.
Take a pause and just all of this data and all these findings. We have Kimberly and we have Steph who are actually a part of the panel. Just maybe go back a slide. Just do you guys, anything you guys want to elaborate on, or is this generally the matching your guys' experience in the development sphere?
It's, for me, it's generally what was discussed and in some instances agreed upon or talked about from my perspective. So thank you for asking.
Yeah, this is Steph. Yeah, I think that this was the conversation. I think BAE did a nice job of researching and getting us a lot of data to be able to form our decision making. So I think that was really positive.
Yeah, it's hard to scale it all down into 10, 12 slides, all the work, the months of work and all the work that BAE did. So some of the key takeaways based on the prior slides, is that the inclusionary housing program is meeting the overall policy goals to create affordable family-sized housing in mixed-income neighborhoods, and more specifically, how IH fits into the broader picture of development feasibility. As kind of noted in the prior slide, that it's offsetting the costs in the Central City, but not necessarily in the high-cost areas outside of the Central City, reducing the feasibility of developments, and that development is difficult in due to other market factors right now, including the increased construction costs. There's other things like we went through as far as the BDS survey that we talked about in a prior meeting, as far as other regulatory changes that could be made to permitting itself to ease the feasibility of development. And, you know, there's other, the only way to get market rate units built and therefore inclusionary housing units built is to improve project feasibility across the board. And the city's taking a number of different efforts that way outside of inclusionary housing. So as to some of the work group recommendations, including from some of your peers on the commission. First of all, we looked at, you know, simplifying standards, adding flexibility, creating clarity. You know, as we started, we knew that's what it would be. That is what we'll do through some of the administrative rule changes, particularly around the offsite program and configuration, the biggest recommendation, as expected, was to extend the full tax exemption outside the central city, particularly when providing 60% of median family income units. And based on the data, again, the extensive data that BAE presented and looking at rents across the city, there is further work that we need to do to figure out what those areas would be, particularly what the impact of the foregone revenue is, et cetera. There was a recommendation based on the complexity of condominium development within the state of Portland, let alone in or state of Oregon, let alone in Portland, that there is a need to really undertake a separate analysis of multifamily homeownership development and in that context, inclusionary housing for sale unit program. So as I mentioned with the guideline, adding flexibility, et cetera, with the reasonable equivalency requirement itself, we are moving forward with the work group recommendations to adjust the minimum IH unit size from 95% to 85% of the market rate units within the building. We're also adjusting the proportion of inclusionary housing units allowed per floor from 25% up to 35%. And for the offsite option, we're increasing the distance allowed for offsite location from 0.5 mile to 2 miles and allowing the opportunity map score of 5, the project to build within the opportunity map score of 4 for their offsite building. We are also looking at changes for reconfiguration, where we would require one market rate two bedroom unit for every reconfigured IH unit, which is much simpler than it is currently in place, and amend the language across the board for simplicity and clarity to make it easier to administer and comply with across the board. Next steps. So as BAE is working on further analysis on the foregone revenue and what the impact would be so that we can inform City Council and recommend an area or areas across the city as to how we could expand the full tax exemption. And we're actively working on COVID administrative rule changes and working on the timeline as far as when those will go into effect. We'll have a public talk process with all of that as far as these will, we'll have an internal hearing open to the public for the administrative rule changes. There's many of these changes that will need to go through City Council, either through Title 33, our zoning code, or Title 30, our affordable housing code, and for the tax exemption, it's Title 3, city administration. Any of this, the tax exemption changes will also need to go before the county commission for approval. So there's still a bit of a process before we're done and lots of room still for input from all of you and the community as well. We will look at that further study on the ownership program part of inclusionary housing, and that could be potentially part of a broader study across our cluster collaboration with the service area. And we're working with Commissioner Rubio's office through our service area, again, on updated housing needs analysis, as well as the housing production strategy for the city across the board. And all of that will help inform on increasing development feasibility across the city, and therefore increasing production of the inclusionary housing. That is the end of our presentation. And certainly we are happy to answer questions because a lot of that was, as I said, very condensed based on the full work that we did. So let's see, Kurt, you're saying the BAE, look at the potential of land in lieu versus fee in lieu. That was not part of the scope for the analysis. No, it was not. other questions?
Dory, is there a recommendation this meeting today?
There isn't a formal recommendation needed. I mean, I think certainly the Housing Bureau always looks to PHAC to give us guidance and help guide how we might present this to City Council. We certainly had the recommendation already from the work group itself, but in so much that we've been able to show you what the goals are, what the outcomes are. Certainly, if you don't feel comfortable with what we're doing, we definitely want to hear about that. Any input you have either today or even in the next couple of months about how we shape the changes that get made to the program is obviously very welcome.
Thank you for the presentation. Any comments from the commission? Comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Just to add a little bit to that, generally when we convene these sort of ad hoc committees, they go really deep in one particular policy. We need to be able to figure out a baton pass to you all as an overarching policy guidance for us and how this weighs in with other sort of policies. So I think that's the work that the Bureau needs to do. When we get the foregone revenue analysis done and we have a better sense of the impact to multi and how much that is, what our forecast would be of our housing production and how much of the potential impact to the property tax, particularly the property tax exemption program, we need to come back to you and further assess and make sure you are all aware of the trade-offs of that foregone revenue. So I can, that analysis is being done over the next month or two, part of the story. And then hopefully in time of the next meeting, you guys can get a sense of how does that, any sort of expansion of the property tax abatement, what is the feasibility impact to that work? And then of course, we may or may not be able to get all the recommendations approved by City Council and the county. So at some point it would be good to get PHAC's take on how do we prioritize the slate of recommendations and tweaks we need to do, and how far can we really take a property tax exception expansion? Because there's obviously trade-offs to all the taxing jurisdictions when we do that work. So it seems like we want to make sure we have a step in this overall process coming back to you. We are getting people want to see the changes go through council sooner than later. But we really need to understand the foregone revenue portion of it, and then of course get your guys' take and get some input with that broader view, since we've already gotten input from on the deeper dive with the committee and so the panel. I just want to just quickly would love to get a pulse check from folks. Do you think we're on the right track? Is it, do you think we're finding the right balance of the various recommendations to meet goals of IH? And Commissioner, you have your hand up. You're on mute.
I do want to say that there was a little bit of back and forth that some of the affordable housing nonprofit providers had some concerns in that there is a little bit of more, we feel as though there could be a deeper sense of competition between the private sector and the nonprofit. And I just wanted to be very transparent with that because that did come up. What we did look at is overall, generally, instead of us looking at our individual organizations and the impacts that may or may not happen to individual nonprofit organizations, that we're looking at it from a lens of getting housing production built, and that having the individual hat on is not what this committee was all about. It's generally trying to get additional units built that make it easier and better policies for inclusionary housing. Thank you.
Steph?
Yeah, I think that that's, I agree with Kimberly mostly that, you know, the lens in which we were looking through this is just increasing housing production, but also balancing that with what we know the needs are for affordable housing and kind of coming together with the market rate developers to understand their perspective and the hurdles that they have. So this is hopefully going to increase the entire pot, not only affordable housing, but also just housing production in general. So.
Thank you.
Just to elaborate on that point, you know, we really had to make sure we were honoring the original policy objectives of the policy itself. And that was the work that PHAC was a part of, as well as the earlier panel. And that's the, how do we create the right kind of incentives to get more affordability? So are we calibrating the policy to get more 60% AMI units? Are we calibrating it to get more family size units? And are we creating geographic diversity across the city? So we're trying to desegregate with this policy. And I will say the findings and overall, the policy was calibrated to achieve those three goals. So, but we also recognize it was causing feasibility challenges for projects outside the central city. So we needed to address those issues first and foremost. But to Dory's point, there's feasibility challenges writ large with rising interest rates, construction costs, supply chain, permitting, et cetera. It can do only so much in IH. There has to be a larger package of reforms that the commissioner's office is working on as part of our service area. So that's what we're hoping to combine IH tweaks with some of its larger packages. And that's what the next phase of work needs to happen.
Excellent discussion. Thanks, Dory. Great presentation. We are going to move forward in our agenda to the remaining 2023 work.
First of all, Jessie's not here. She's on a well-deserved vacation right now, and she will be the one working with you all this fall and in terms of doing some kind of retreat planning. I just wanted to just recognize that the Bureau cluster alignment work is well underway. And what that means for this city is an opportunity for us to take a look at all the various advisory committees that we all undertake. So as you all know, PHB has 5 different advisory committees. We're talking to a consultant to help us really better evaluate the effectiveness of each of those. And I know you all have identified the need to do more vision and visioning and work planning as part of PHAC to make sure that you guys are weighing in the right place and weighing in the right approach. And that's the kind of deeper dive work we need to do with you as well as some of the other advisory committees. There's some opportunity, I believe, in charter reform. We could be either looking at thinking about, do we change the scope slightly of some of the different advisory committees, and how do we make sure we have potential representation from our different other advisory committees onto PHAC? So we're just thinking a little bit more creatively, how do we structurally better align so that you're all able to have the full picture of the work that we're doing and how we're getting input from other constituents that have subject matter expertise in those other arenas, and how do we make sure that is being transferred more directly to the work that you all are doing. So we're hoping to hire a consultant to do some assessment work, interviews, conversations, and propose some potential structural changes
in how we operate our advisory committees. That, of course, needs to happen when we have a permanent director, you know, and of course, it's aligned with the goals of charter reform and how we work more closely with the other service area bureaus. That's just a long way of saying every part of the city is going through the same, you know, having a lot of the same conversations of what is this all going to look like? We're going to have new committees come out of charter reform. Are we going to have one big budget advisory committee, or are we going to continue for sort of as a status quo and then keep feeding into a larger bag? You know, my sense is no one wants to do duplicative work, and I think we're all recognizing the strengths of that kind of alignment. It's been pretty incredible, actually. We are hoping to have some of that assessment work done in advance of a November 5th retreat. I believe, is it in the calendar somewhere?
No, I thought we were setting a date today.
Yeah, that's part of the discussion, is to look at another date.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, other than the November 5th, one of the key partners or managers won't be in town. So,
okay, well,
we need to talk about a new day.
Sounds good. Well, it sounds like we need to talk about a new day, but really, in general, love to get your guys' take on where that thinking, a little bit of having that kind of assessment done in terms of what are all the sort of different policy issues are you taking on? How does that fit with some of the other advisory groups that we are managing? Can we think about some structural changes in our advisory committees? Should we think about appointments? How does that inform what kind of appointments we have going forward? And can we get a, my sense is you all have been asking for more of a clear purpose statement, vision statement for PHAC. And just wanted to get a pulse check from you all. Love to hear from you. Is that the right slate of topics to talk about at a say 4-hour retreat? Are we missing something, or should we think about that a little bit differently?
Love to hear your input. Oops. Love to hear your input. I could call on you individually, or you could maybe volunteer your thoughts. Let's say you. Well, let's go for it. Sarah, do you have any thoughts, any ideas in regard to this?
No, and I will honestly admit that I was typing an email just a moment ago, so I don't really know what you just asked me to comment on. You called me out.
Fully understand. I fully understand. We're talking about preparation for the fall retreat.
Okay, that was my guess. And instead of you know, attempting to cover myself, I thought I'd clarify. I have previously asked, and I feel like what we need to do is, or what I would like to do with PHAC anyway, is like a real identification of purpose and what role we serve and what each commissioner can bring to that. So in addition to topics that we want to explore, I feel like really clarifying the role of PHAC and the individual commissioners would be helpful for many of us.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for two things. Thanks for the contribution and also for your honesty. Appreciate that. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. Steph?
Yeah, I think it would be good to, I agree with Sarah, and I think it would be in addition to review kind of like what our bylaws are, what, you know, we went through this a few years ago of stating like the attendance and, you know, what our oversight was and what we were. So it'd be good to just go back and review the materials that we spent a good amount of time all agreeing to, not everybody in this group, but some of the folks from the past. I think it would just be good to review that. We should probably do that annually because we're getting new members all of the time, to just get them up to speed with here's what we're agreeing to as being PHAC members with respect to attendance and participation and those kinds of things.
Thanks, Steph. Kimberly, I see your hand. I'll call you in just a second. Steph, when you say that, are you talking about from the standpoint of onboarding and contextualizing? Are you talking about it from the standpoint of mooring and making sure that you're staying true to the objectives?
I think it's both. I think it's onboarding and just us reminding ourselves, like, what are the rules, right? Like, what, you know, to not put our own specific agenda, that we are here to really on behalf of affordable housing, and what are the, you know, elements that we need to remind ourselves that we, and there may be like another addition to this, kind of what Sarah's alluding to, that's a little more definitive of like, what is our purpose? That song from Barbie.
I haven't seen it.
Maybe not. But anyways, that would be a good theme song. Yep.
Thank you very much. Kimberly.
Well, I haven't seen Barbie either. So now that's really piqued my interest, what that song is. And I agree with both Sarah and Steph. I think also that it's important to see what the new director, or at least an interim director of the Portland Housing Bureau, has in mind. Because I think that that person needs an opportunity to help provide some guidance and leadership and direction. So I don't want to get too far out there without having a person in place, basically.
Thank you very much. Felicia.
I think that, like Sarah and Steph, especially, and Kimberly, I think one of the things that really is clearly defined how this committee supports what's needed in the community and supports the staff. How do we move it from just a report out? Because I can read a lot of this stuff, like specifically what kind of feedback do you need from PHAC so that I come prepared to the meetings with what you need as feedback. So I read the materials ahead, where this meeting isn't presentation of slide after slide after slide, but really around robust feedback that staff from PHB can take back that is really is substantial for their work, versus having to feel like they have to come and present to us. Because when you come to present to us, I feel sometimes, to what end? And so what is the outcome you're really looking from this committee? Because I think the current way it works, in my personal opinion, is it needs to change. It needs to have, I think you'll have a hard time keeping committee members if a majority of it is just receiving information. And so I really want it to be where there is that interactive, where we come and you're like, we really need this feedback from you. So here are the materials that you need to read ahead of time, is what I would really say. I think it would be helpful for staff, and I think it would be helpful for PHAC to have a real clear defined role. That's the one of the things that it's interesting about the budgeting process. We're still learning how to get there, but that's the one time I really do feel like there is at least some feedback that's really, really needed from PHAC. But besides that, the rest of the time, sometimes I do struggle.
Thank you very much. Good feedback. I have a question for you in that regard. Sounds to me like you're talking about a working committee, that this commission kind of be a part of the development of the process. Did I hear you correctly?
That is correct, because a lot of us have been in the field of affordable housing for a significant amount of time. And I really do feel like we are here to work in collaboration with staff. And I really want us to be able to provide support for staff that's doing the work on the ground. I want to be really clear. I believe we are here as an advisory board. We are not here to micromanage staff. We are not here to tell staff how to do their job. I want to be really clear where the boundaries are, but I really want to be like Dory just presented. And I really, if I would have received that ahead of time, I could be a lot more helpful. And if she gave me very specific, like, here's where I really need to get feedback from the commission, I think it it's much more helpful that way, to give one example. And so really around being really clear what our role is, and which is not to micromanage staff, is not to tell them, but really how can we be supportive and useful.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any further thoughts from the commission in regard to topics for the retreat? Okay, I think we have one last aspect, and that is the determining of a date for the retreat. Would it be most feasible to do a doodle poll, or did we want to try to capture availability from the commission as they are present? That's an ask. I'm not suggesting one way or the other.
Do you have guidance?
I think there's only four of us here, so you might do better with a doodle poll.
Good.
You know, unless the four of us just want to pick the date. When do we get for being here today?
Week of the 3rd, October 30th. So October 30th through November 3rd. So that week. And then any one of those days from 12 to 5. And we could send a beautiful, that's what they prefer. But that's the week that Jesse was looking at.
So apparently there is a week Jesse is considering as the last week of October, very first part of November, so October 30th through November 3rd, and then between the times of 12 to 5. So we'll, doodle poll will be coming, but you can anticipate those dates and those time frames. So October 30 to November 3rd between noon and 5. Thank you.
I might have a conflict. We have our big fundraiser on October 28th, and I know that there's maybe a need for me to be back in California like immediately following that. So I'm hoping to be able to make it, but I'm not sure.
I'm out of town November 2nd and 3rd, but around otherwise. And I put it in the chat as well.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Kimberly. So it's looking like if it is that week, potentially it would be that Monday, Tuesday, or that Wednesday. So anticipate a doodle coming out for us to respond to. Anything else within the categories we've covered?
I just want to take a moment and really express my deep thanks to Jesse Connor, who is unfortunately not here, but just, she does so much behind the scenes, keeping all of this on track. Of course, all the managers are, they help out, but also with the guidance of our two co-chairs, Sarah and Felicia, it's just been wonderful getting this, always good to get, hear what the pulse is out there, what the feedback is, and we can adapt accordingly. And I just want to echo what Commissioner Folsom mentioned in terms of, let's get clear and crisper what kind of input and how we want the input of all these various policies. This has been, it's been an incredible slate of work we've all done the last 5, 7, 8 years between mm-hmm. passing the bond, passing inclusionary housing, changing the TIF set aside strategy in terms of the housing, the North and Northeast housing strategy, maximizing it. Indebtedness, looking at new TIF districts, tweaking inclusionary housing, looking at the multi, changing, by the way, the legislative session, they actually amended the state statute so we don't have to go to city council and multis any longer in terms of an individual basis. But that's all because of all the things you guys bring to us and the experience you have in trying to move our projects and our programs forward. We could not do this work without you, and we need to make sure the feedback loop is complete and continues going forward. So I just want to express my appreciation to all of you for your time, because I know it is an incredible amount of time. And there's no real great time to go, but this has been an incredibly productive year, I gotta say. So I have only continued optimism and hope that you guys will continue overseeing a huge ambitious slate of affordable housing resources and policies going forward. Thank you.
Well, thank you. As we're coming to the end of our meeting, I want to go back to public testimony and see if we had the two who signed up, if they're present.
They're not.
They're not, okay. Well, it's recorded, so hopefully they'll catch that it was recorded. We also identified two opportunities for them to participate. Anything from the commissioners for the good of the order, anything that was not covered that you want to highlight? So let me go through each commissioner that is still present. I will call you by name and give you an opportunity if there was anything that wanted to be highlighted. So I will begin again with Sarah. No?
I was listening, but I don't have anything to add at this time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Steph?
I don't have anything. No, thank you.
Absolutely. Kimberly?
Nothing. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Felicia?
One thing to add. I want to thank Molly for her leadership, and you will be missed at PHB, and Washington County is fortunate to have you. And thank you for always being an advocate in our industry. And we are so excited that you will be leading the work in Washington County. And so thank you for everything that you have done over the years, Molly, and you will be missed.
I echo that, Molly. You're absolutely going to be missed. It's been great working with you. Appreciate the time in a variety of capacities, facilitating meetings, bond oversight committee, various times doing a variety of other meetings for the work of the Bureau, and then as the chair of the oversight committee. So it's been great. What a journey.
Ooh, it is.
What a journey. Much done. Thank you to all of the commission. Thank you for being here today. Excellent meeting, and you have about 40 minutes. Not so much back into your day, but 40 minutes to use in a variety of ways. Hopefully you will do something that's fun and enjoyable since you would have been in a PHAC meeting until 5 o'clock. Enjoy your the rest of the afternoon into the evening. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you, Stephen. Good job.